91.3 FM WLVR in Bethlehem. Yes, it's the Thursday edition of Fritz Rocks. Good afternoon. Glad to have you with me. And, okay, if you tuned in yesterday, you heard me talking about this major announcement that I had, that we did have an interview coming up, and we weren't sure whether or not we were going to be able to pull it off. But we did. And, yeah, it's out of the bag. I am talking to the one, the only, Ronnie James Dio. Ronnie, how are you, brother?
I'm doing really, really well, AJ. Thanks for all the hyperbole there in the beginning. It's great.
Oh, sure, man. Sure, man. I know that you're busy, and you got a couple of things, you know, happening in the road. And I think the first thing we'd like to do, if it's all right with you, is I'd like to welcome you, of course. You know, it's an honor to talk to you, Ronnie. Let's catch up with Ronnie James Dio today, and then we can talk about the old days for a little bit, for a few minutes. But the world tour starts in Japan in May. You got the new album, Master of the Moon, and maybe you could talk a little bit about Jeff playing on that album, and Rudy, and the band, and we'll just catch up with you.
Sure. Well, the last studio album that we did was Master of the Moon, but to this date, the record company had released a DVD that we did at Roseland about a year and a half ago.
Oh, at the ballroom.
Yeah.
Oh, and, okay.
They also released the soundtrack as a CD. I think it's billed as something like one for the home and one more for the road. So you can play it, you know, in your CD player, or you can go home and watch a DVD as well.
Oh, wow, cool.
Which was pretty cool. So there's that you know, that's been released. And so one of the reasons why I'm busy today, you know, after you, AJ, doing some more. So that's the newest product. And the tour, as you say, starts in May in Japan. We won't be going to America this year.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, we've got so much to do in Europe. We've got a lot of festivals to play in the summertime. A Spanish tour. We've got a South American tour. We've got an English tour. We've got a month in Russia, which follows after the month in Russia, which is in September. Then we go to the UK and do October. So we'll be finishing at the end of October. So it's going to be a long, long haul for us this year.
Wow, wow. Yeah, it sounds like a grueling tour. But, you know, when was the last time you went out and did a tour like this?
Last year.
Last year.
We do it all the time.
You're a madman, and that is so awesome. Where do you find the energy to keep up with it, man?
Well, it's pretty easy, really. You know, you're quite blessed because you get to do what you love every day. Look at the poor people who go to their job and hate every minute of it, you know.
Exactly.
And, you know, that doesn't mean that it's an easy job. It's, you know, as hard as anything else out there, just because of, as you know, as we talked about before, the grueling travel schedule is really pretty brutal.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the show, and the, especially in my case as a singer, the worry about, oh, am I going to catch a cold? Oh, is the voice going to go, you know, if I catch pneumonia or something? So, you know, it's all very, very difficult to do, but, you know, it's the music at the end of the day and the people you play it for, because my attitude has always been, I've been a live musician. That's what I like to do.
Yeah.
That's where you prove what you are. You can do almost anything these days in a studio, and it'll sound okay. It'll sound passable. But, you know, it's being able to prove it year after year, show after show.
Yeah, pulling it off live, man.
Exactly. So that's what keeps me going. That's why I like to do it, because I get to play in front of an audience, and that's a joy for me.
That's awesome. Do you think there was a defining moment for you that led you to become a singer and a songwriter?
Singer and songwriter is something I really never cared much about.
Okay.
I only wanted to be the bass player.
All right.
Because in, you know, the first band I played in what was to become Elf.
Yes.
I was a bass player in the early days.
Yeah, you got to it quicker than I do, because I was going to get to that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, nothing escapes me, AJ.
Yeah, okay, brother.
So, you know, I didn't want to be the anything but the bass player. I really enjoyed that. I had never really done any singing before. The rest of the guys all tried, and they were pretty horrible. So they said, okay, it's your turn. And I said, I don't really want to do this. And they said, well, just give it a try. And it would just came so easy to me, so naturally to me, because I started off my early life at 5 years old playing the trumpet. And so I played the horn for a long time and learned technique. And I just applied that to my singing. I breathed correctly, and I had good technique as a horn player. So I had good technique as a singer as well. And then writing became something that really I wanted to do, because I got sick of doing other people's material and felt at some point, like I think we all do, that you know, to make yourself a bit more special, you've got to be special unto yourself. So I wanted to tackle that as well. But it was never anything pre-planned for me. It wasn't something that I wanted to do as soon as I saw someone sing or anything like that. It was just, for me, it was first the music, just playing the instrument. And that's really been one of the most beneficial things for me, because, you know, singers are always looked at as being the singer. They're not usually considered to be one of the guys in the band. I mean, they're in the band.
But, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The musicians, you know, they've got this thing for singers, and, you know, some rightfully so, because a lot of singers don't really have an awful lot of talent to either sing or write.
Yeah.
But it's the difference between having that instrument that you're playing and being the singer. So unless you can converse with these people on your own terms and musical terms, and luckily I played for such a long time.
A long time, yeah.
That we talk as musicians, and I've always been accepted as that because my ideas and my suggestions have been as musical as anyone else's. So that was always good for me. So I wouldn't trade not wanting to be the singer for, you know, for all that time, for being the singer for all that time. But once I did decide that was a good route for me to go, I had to make a choice, which was, you're going to be a really good bass player, you're going to be a really good singer.
Really good singer, yeah.
And I thought it'd probably be better for me to be a really good singer. I found it a bit more challenging anyway. So that's how it really happened.
Oh, wow. That's a cool story, too, because, you know, it really wasn't planned for you. You know? And a lot of people I talk to, you know, they know, you know, there is a moment for some, you know, whether it's being, you know, seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan or whatever, you know?
Sure.
You know?
Well, I mean, the first thing that made me want to be in a band was exactly that situation, but not what wanted to make me be a singer. That's,
okay.
That's why I kind of differentiated that.
Sure, that's cool.
I went to a dance at the high school when I was, probably about 10 years old or something, and saw a band that was a rock and roll band from Binghamton. And I'd never seen anything like that before, and that night I found a drummer and a guitar player and a sax player, as it happens, to form a band. I formed a band that night. That was my defining moment. When I saw that band, I said, I know I've got to do this. And that, for me, that was the moment.
Man, that's pretty lucky, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah, I would say, definitely. At WLVR here, we produce a specialty program. It's called Rock 101. And the whole premise, you know, it's set up that take the listener to a classroom and teach them about rock history.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the episodes was a hard rock episode. And it just so happens that you were featured. We kicked off the show and we talked about Elf and then Rainbow, of course. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to ask you a little bit about that.
Of course.
You know, having, you know, secured a legacy or having a status in, you know, metal history or rock history today, what is it about Dio that makes it so special for you?
Well, I think that I've always tried to lead myself up to the point that eventually became Dio. And by that, you mentioned Rainbow, of course, after Rainbow, Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
And so I had the opportunity to eventually be what I wanted to be. When we first started, getting some success and going on the road and opening up for Deep Purple for all the times that we did and being signed to their management and being part of that Deep Purple family, we were an alpha band with a piano player. And Mickey Lee Sewell.
Mickey Lee Sewell, of course,
right.
Yes.
And that was a feature of the band. And so there's not a lot of opportunity to be very dark when you've got a honky-tonk piano player up there tinkling the ivories all the time. So we were, of course, a different kind of band. Elf was a more just pretty basic rock and roll,
yeah,
more garage band.
Yeah, honky-tonk, barroom, you know.
Exactly. But, you
rock.
Know, we covered all the bases. We did, you had to do in those days a lot of copy material. I mean, I've probably done every Beatles song on earth so many times, I could still probably do them for you. But that's what we were. But in all the Elf albums that we did, although they were very populated with this honky-tonk kind of rock and roll stuff, there are always a couple tracks that seemed a little bit darker.
Yes.
And that's what I always wanted to do. So as we went along, the things I started to write became darker and darker, a little bit more fantasy-oriented here and there, even in Elf toward the end of it. And then I was lucky enough to be in Rainbow, which gave me such an opportunity to be more fantasy-oriented just because of Richie's aura, just because
sure.
of his image, and the image that he and I wanted Rainbow to be. We wanted it to be this medieval classical kind of band.
Right.
And so that allowed me to take it one step farther. Well, then in Sabbath, that was like the pinnacle. I could do anything I wanted in the dark matter in Sabbath, and that was just a joy for me. There were no restrictions. I could just let the most, you know, the darkest inner reaches of my soul and mind come hurtling through in the songs. And then to Dio, which gave me all of the blend of all of those things, rock and roll attitude, feel of rock and roll from Elf, the classical interjection with Rainbow, the real dark and heavy doomy side of it was Sabbath, and I combined all those things, and it became Dio. And you know, luckily a band that I was finally able to be in control of my own destiny. I didn't mind sharing with other people. You know, it was never a problem for me, because my attitude has always been that of a guy in a band. It's not, I'm Ronnie Dio and here's a band. I mean, it may seem that way to a lot of people because people come and people go, but Dio stays constant because of me, I guess.
Well, sure.
But that doesn't mean that, you know, that my attitude isn't as a band thing. It always is.
Right.
The things I've always done well have always been, you know, done with others.
With others,
so
yeah.
So they need as much consideration as I do. But in this instance, you know, I have the control of my life and this band, and I can direct it where I want it to go. So it won't be a honky-tonk band anymore. It'll always be, you know, a little bit darker.
A little bit darker, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what happened with that situation.
Let's talk a little bit about your discography. Oh, and by the way, your website's awesome, man. RonnieJamesDio.com.
Yeah, they're doing a good job of it. There were a couple of down times, but it's come back alive again.
Yeah, but it's very informative, too, and it's you know, real user-friendly and all that good stuff,
yeah.
You know, and it's got a real hot look to it, too.
Yeah, man. I'm real happy about it.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up as well, so the listener can go there whenever they want and find out what's happening with
cool.
you. But, you know, you've got your entire discography on the site, which is awesome to see it all there. And when you look at, you know, 45 studio live or compilation releases, are there any faves for you from each period of your career? And if not, or if there are, you can name them. But if not, is it that all of it is special in its own way and it doesn't, you know, stand out in any way for you?
Well, there have always been things that I think everybody goes through this, things that you don't like. I mean, everything can't be a winner. And there have been some very confusing times, I think, within this band, not only personally, but certainly musically. And we went through some searching periods and some real down times. So, you know, it's not all painted rosy. But I think the most definitive things would be I've been lucky enough to be part of three different almost generations of music because of A, Rainbow Rising album.
Yes.
And that band in itself. Two, Heaven and Hell with Black Sabbath.
With Black Sabbath, right.
And with Holy Diver.
Holy Diver.
Right. And even, you know, and Last in Line after it. But those were very, very magical moments for it seemed like each era generation started with those particular albums. Not just us, of course, but
right.
I was lucky enough to have those three defining moments. And those will always be, you know, the things that got me here.
Oh, awesome. Glad to hear you talk about it that way. It's pretty cool. Tell us about who you may regard as, you know, some great singers today and yesterday.
Well, today it's hard to hear too many of them.
Yeah.
It's not the way it was, and it's not that there probably aren't some good ones out there, but music has taken, you know, a different direction than the music that I've played and still do play. And my attitude for singing is very different than anyone else's. So if I'm going to compare them to my attitude, it makes it even more difficult. You know, I expect to hear a good voice that's in control, that has range, that has strength, that has beauty in it, that has expression in it. To me, you have to have all of those things to be, in my mind, a really good singer. So I don't hear a lot. I mean, Chris Cornell, who's like been around for a while now, was, you know, the first one that I had heard for a long time, and I thought, whoa,
amazing,
great, this kid's great.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, they've had such a long career now. I can't. He'll have to be one of the guys in the past, I guess.
Yeah.
But you know, beyond that, you know, I don't really hear a lot of people. I hear songs that I like, and I think they're constructed well, and it perhaps makes the singer sound okay,
mm-hmm.
but I just don't hear that one great voice coming out going, whoa, check this out.
Yeah, okay.
But in the past, you know, for me, it's always been people like, you know, Paul Rogers.
Another great.
Yeah, just so feelful, so soulful.
Yeah, very soulful, yeah.
You know, I always liked the people that I grew up singing songs, singing their songs, people like Sam Cooke.
Oh,
Sam and Dave.
Yes.
Jackie Wilson. Because, you know, coming from where I come from, you know, upstate New York, from Cortland, it's, you know, that's the music we heard because we had, you know, a university there, Cortland State University, and all the people that came there came from Long Island or from New York City. And so luckily they brought to this little 18,000 population cow town music that we never would have heard had they not brought it from, you know, the metropolitan area. So we were stuck right into that, and we loved, you know, all of the rhythm and blues stuff was great for me, you know, as a singer. It was great for me as to sing, to be able to learn to sing with some feel. So those people I liked an awful lot. People like Ian Gillan, you know, like
Deep Purple, yeah.
Yeah, I guess the list goes. Rob Halford, another
great one,
big voice. Bruce Dickinson, another one.
Yes, another one, of course.
You know, there have been so many more in the past than
sure.
the ones that I can think of right at the moment. Those are some, and you know, I'm sure I'm missing some people that I absolutely love. But you know, just off the top of my head, those are certainly some of them.
All right, man. Thanks for sharing that with us. That's
sure.
cool. I wanted to ask you. Okay, so you had, you know, the different bands throughout your career, okay? And, you know, you've played with quite a few musicians, you know, in your career. Is there anyone you would still wish to play or write with, past or present?
No, not really. I never really think about what was.
Okay.
Because to me, that was, and obviously it didn't work for some reason. There's
okay.
no reason to go back to that. I did that once with Sabbath. We did, you know, get back together and do the Dehumanizer album
mm-hmm.
and do a tour. But, you know, that fell apart as rapidly as it fell apart the first time.
First time, okay.
So, you know, as much as I love those guys and I thought it was such a productive time and I really, really loved writing with Tony, you know, it's just hard for me to go back to that now. So, you know, I'm dealing with the people that I deal with now, and so I don't really think of it that way. I think I'm such a specialized writer in the way that I write and the way I go about writing that I think it makes it difficult probably these days for anyone to do that kind of writing unless they know me, like our guitar player,
mm-hmm.
Craig Goldie. Craig is, you know, very attuned to what I need and what I want and feels the same way. So when you find that, you don't really think beyond that.
Okay.
So for me, you know, I'm until I have to write with somebody else, I don't think I'll go back to where I was before.
Were there any concerts or gigs that you remember in your career that really stood out for you as amazing or exceptional? And if so, why?
Well, two come to mind right away. One was the very first gig we did in Sabbath. That was at the L.A. Coliseum. We had 110,000 people in the place.
Massive.
That was our first show in America.
Oh, my
and
God.
It was pretty stunning.
I
can't forget that one. And secondly, I think it would have to be the Spectrum in Philadelphia, the first time we went there with Sabbath as well.
Okay.
And what had happened was that before that, I had spent, you know, a couple weeks getting a finger from everybody, you know, because I was an Aussie and, you know, whatever that may have been like. I always remember when we played at the Spectrum and that first Sabbath show, that not the first show we did, of course, but the first time we played the Spectrum with Sabbath,
mm-hmm.
some kids in the front held out this banner that must have been about 15 feet long and about 4 feet high, and then they held it up and it said, "Philadelphia welcomes and loves the Reverend Ronnie James." And for some strange reason, after that, I never got the finger anymore. But I think most of that was due to the fact that, you know, Heaven and Hell was such a great album that people went to see it. Were again from a slightly different generation. The
yeah.
people who had loved Sabbath with Ozzy had kind of flown away from them, whether because they were getting older or because the band wasn't successful for a while until Heaven and Hell. And so when Heaven and Hell came, it was really the start of a new era anyway.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, like the beginning, end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s, and it was the perfect time and the perfect place for it. And so I think we had a whole different set of Sabbath fans. And to this day, there are people who, example, I'll give you a friend of mine, Jack Black.
Okay.
Jack's a huge Sabbath fan, but a huge Sabbath fan from Heaven and Hell onward.
Oh, cool.
And he sometimes goes on the stage with his band Tenacious D, and he'll say, "No, I want to do a Black Sabbath song for you." And they all go, "Hey," and he goes, "No, not an Ozzy song." He goes, "The real Black Sabbath with Ronnie James Dio." And of course, everybody boos, you know, boo.
But then
Jack says, "Well, you know, whatever you think, you can think whatever you want to, but this is the man that got me here, and this is great music." You know, and of course, they go, "Yay, whatever."
But, that's awesome, though.
But that shows you the generation.
Yes, it does. Sure, it does.
You know, he wasn't that so much into, you know, old Sabbath as he was into
Dio Sabbath.
He was into the Sabbath with me, or with you know, some AC/DC. You know, another one of his favorites.
Sure.
So you know, that particular time, anyway, that I'm going back to Philadelphia when the fingers stopped, I'd like to think that it was partly because of them, but I know a lot of it was because it was such a damn good album and a really good band.
Yeah, well, and, you know, in fact, being so close, you know, who knows? It could have been people right here from the Lehigh Valley where, you know, I'm coming to you from, you
sure.
know?
That's right. Well, yeah. You know, Bethlehem, Allentown, all that area, we played there so much in, not yes. only in Elf, but we played there in Dio,
quite
a few times. You know, always a great area to play. We're great rock and roll people there, much like I say, the place I grew up in upstate New York. The same kind of attitude.
We all exactly.
talk the same. We all got the same accents, you know.
Yeah.
So we say, give me my socks.
Yeah.
Where's my mom? You know, those kind of things. So I think my accent,
yeah.
I've mellowed out. I've softened it just a little bit. But, you know, in a heated conversation, you know, everyone will go, what did you just say? Did you just say socks?
Socks.
And I say, yes, I said socks.
Socks, yeah. Was, how about this? Were there any unforgettable horror stories from the road or your career that might be amusing?
Well, there are a lot of amusing
I'm
stories.
Sure, but
I mean, some of them are really incredibly amusing.
If you could give us one, Ronnie, that'd be cool.
Okay, I'll give you one. This is one of my favorite stories.
Okay.
This is in the Rainbow days. We
okay.
had gone to a town called Gelsenkirchen in Germany.
All right.
And we got there the night before the show. And
is this a hamlet or a burg or what?
I'm sorry?
Is this like a hamlet or a burg or a large city?
Good-sized city.
Okay.
Yeah, good-sized city.
Okay.
We went to the hotel, got there that night, and went to the bar, of course, and, you know, started, this is great. And then sat down at the table after the bar closed, and our promoter came in. His name is Eric Thompson. He's a Danish guy, but he went everywhere with us. He was a huge fan as well. So we were talking to him, and he said, I just have to go and get my room. He had come after we did. So he went to the desk, got his key, came back down, and sat with us. It was myself, Cozy, I think at the time, I think it was Bob Daisley. I don't remember who else was sitting there, but
Cozy Powell, yes.
He Eric made the mistake of putting his key down on the table as we were talking to him, and so Cozy,
okay.
of course, got his key right away, went up to his room, took all the furniture out of his room, put it off someplace else, and left just the phone in the middle of his room. So he came back down quickly, put the key back on the table. We kept Eric busy plying him with drink, which wasn't difficult, and put the key back down. Eric said, well, I'm going to go to bed now. So off he went, went to bed, and he came rushing down a few minutes later, and standing at the front desk. I demand to have another room. What is this? You give me a room with no furniture. I can't believe this. So we're so sorry, sir. That must have been a room that was being cleaned. So they gave him another key, and he made the mistake of coming to our table again and sat down again.
Oh,
I have to have a drink. No, I can't take this. Cozy got his key, went up to his new room, took all of his furniture out of his room. And so he went back up to his room, but he didn't come back down again. So we sat there going, well, you know. So a few minutes later, Cozy said, well, I'm going to go to bed now. So Cozy went off, and he came down a few minutes later, and he said, that bastard.
Yeah.
Said, Eric has removed all the furniture from my room. Well, I'll get him, don't worry. So we all went to sleep. And the next morning, we discovered that at about 4 o'clock in the morning, Cozy had strapped a fire extinguisher to his back and climbed up the face of the building, balcony to balcony, up to Eric Thompson's room.
No.
Stuck the fire extinguisher in the window, turned it upside down, and legged it off the side somewhere.
Oh, no.
So the next morning, you know, we were sitting at the table, and Cozy told us about it, and we went, wow, it's pretty amazing.
Oh, no.
And down came Eric Thompson. Eric said, good morning. Morning, everyone.
Went,
uh-oh, Cozy got the wrong room. He put it into a room where there was a German businessman.
Oh, no.
It, you know, it almost killed the guy. I mean, I'm not trying to laugh at it now. He was all right, so I can tell the story this way. But it's, you know, not only because did it suck all the oxygen out of the room, but it just, all the foam went everywhere underneath his door, out into the hallway, and I think it cost us something like $50,000 to have to repair.
Oh, my
the
God.
Damage that was done, all for one badly turned joke. But it was pretty amusing.
Wow. That's a great story, man.
I've got a million of them.
That's a great one. I know you're busy, so I have a few more questions, and then we'll let you go. All right?
Okay.
How about this? What's your impression of the music industry yesterday and today?
Well, yesterday, the people who were running record companies were fans. They were people who really cared about nurturing artists, like giving them more than a one album chance. It was about money. It's always about money.
Well, sure.
But it wasn't about money the way it is today.
It was
so now
different.
We've turned it around, and you do have the people who are heads of corporations now, record corporations, are people who are responsible to make the figures add up in the black and not in the red.
Mm-hmm.
So If you can have the biggest hit on the face of the planet, and if you don't have one the next time out, chances are, like a Bic pen, you're just going to be thrown away. Mm-hmm. And that, I found, is incredibly the greatest difference, that the people who cared aren't there anymore. I think we'll also find that there's a real glut of talent out there. I mean, and I think maybe I used the word talent just a little bit too freely there. Maybe there are so many musicians because they can be, because they don't learn the craft the way that we used to. Sure, some of them do. Of course they do. But, you know, it's so easy to go into your own little digital studio in your bedroom these days and create something that, that used to take us months to do and take us a long time to get to the point where we could present it to a record company and get a deal. These days, deals are instant. But, you know, so is fame and so is success. That's pretty instant as well, and it comes and goes pretty instantly. That's why what people like I have done are able to last, because we've seen all the things that have gone wrong, and we learn how to avoid those things. Unfortunately, today, it's the fame is hoisted upon people so quickly that they just don't know how to accept it. But those are the main differences I see.
Wow, you summed it up in a nutshell.
And, well, that's easy when you've been burned as many times.
You've been burned as many, yeah. And it's great to hear that kind of insight from someone who's been in the industry for so long, and to let the listener know, that's the difference. And, wow, who knows if it'll ever change. I don't think it'll ever go back to what it was.
No, of course it won't. No,
it won't.
Impossible. No, I mean, the world is not set, the humanity is not set up to remain the same.
To remain the same, yeah.
No, we always have to, go bigger and faster and go away farther. I mean, and that's just the nature of humanity.
Of humanity, right.
Let's face it, we haven't been on this planet very long.
No.
And, we're not going to be on it much longer
no,
either. So we're one of those species who come and go real quickly.
Yeah.
And so I think we're kind of, I think we got this built-in clock that says, all right, let's enjoy everything and go for everything before it's all over.
Before it's all over.
And sometimes we let, technology just gets really, really ahead of what we are as human beings.
Okay. What do you listen to, or do you ever listen to music to unwind?
Yeah. I listen to a lot of classical music because I grew up listening to that, and it really soothes me because I spend my whole life rocking and rolling, I need something to wash my brain out of that, of the ringing in my ears, and it soothes me, and I'm just always been just so in awe of the great composers, from Beethoven to Bach to Dvorak to whomever. I just think that it's such incredible talent that those people had, and there's some people out there doing it today, but nothing like the old masters. But that really cleanses my brain. Other than that, I try to listen to things that are new. I like things like Queens of the Stone Age record that they did. I was waiting for another one. I mean, I thought it was cool. I like what Dave Grohl does with Foo Fighters and all his other projects. He's great at what he does. I was waiting for another Darkness album. I listened to that as well. But just things that I listen to most of the time, I hear and say, that doesn't please me. I might like the song, but I hate the performance. Or I might like the performance and really hate the song. I want to see both those things happen. So I just don't hear a lot of things that I'll just, constantly listen to. And because I'm so busy creating all things for myself, I try not to listen when I'm doing that, because I'm afraid I'm going to steal something from someone unconsciously. You listen to something enough, and it's almost becomes yours after a while. So for all those reasons, I listen to the things that make me feel good, and I try to listen to bands that CDs that people give me on the road. I listen to those, and say, oh, that's really good. What can I do about this? I just don't know what my place in all of this is anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you suggested, the business has changed so much now. It's almost impossible to go, okay, let's put all of our money behind that band because this is going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have to think of yourself at some point, too. Are you going to lose everything to fight within the arena that's been created now, which is really, really a difficult one, I think.
Your legacy, Ronnie, has been set. I mean, it's set for us, it's recorded, it's down, okay, and you're not done. And I'd like to ask you, what would you like to be remembered for and why?
Well, I think...
Or doesn't it matter?
Of course it matters.
Okay.
Of course it matters. You know,
right.
I mean, I'm not without ego. I mean, I have, I know that I've worked hard for whatever legacy I have.
That's right. You've worked very hard over the years.
I have. And it's important to me to preserve that.
Yes.
You know, to preserve that legacy. I don't want it to be tarnished. I don't want to stay in this business until someone forces me out. I'll know when it's time, when I can't do it at this level anymore. I'll stop because I want to be known just as, you know, luckily people consider me, you know, one of the good voices in rock and roll. That's very important to me. I think, even though it sounds like one of those old cliched things, but I've said this before and I'll say it again, you know, I'd rather be remembered, as, you know, by fans anyway, for as many of them do, the ones who really know me, as being a person just like them, someone who is approachable, who doesn't think that he's better than anyone else, who can learn from them, who treats them as an equal, not as a subordinate. I think that's the way I'd like to be remembered. I'm very happy that at one point VH1, the 100 Most Precious Metal Moments.
I was going to wrap up with that, but go ahead.
Sorry about that, man.
That's okay, brother.
But just that the first one, the one that got number one, was a real point of pride for me and for, you know, for Jimmy Bain and for Vivian Campbell and for Vinnie Appice and for Claude Snell, the people who took part in that, especially Vinnie and Jimmy, or Vivian and Jimmy, who really thought about doing it. So, you know, they're unfortunately, the credit came to me because I had more success, I guess.
Yeah.
But I did kind of, you know, drag everybody around after I got involved with it. But that's right. That was supposed to be my job. But I was so pleased that that was the number one thing, because once again, it proves to me that, you know, I guess that was more important because we're dealing with people who are suffering and who needed help.
Yeah.
And what better thing can you do than to help someone
help
if possible?
Someone.
So, you know, I'd like to be remembered, you know, for that. So I guess I'd like to be remembered for both things. Yeah, he really sang really good, and, you know, you could actually talk to him.
Yeah.
So those are the things I'd like to be remembered for.
Thank you, Ronnie.
You're welcome.
That's awesome. Well, I know you got stuff to do. I'm going to let you go, but I'll let you wrap up. And is there anything that you would like to tell the listener, whether it be, you know, your website, you know, of course, the new album, the tour, you know, will Dio, you know, do a stateside tour? You know, is that planned anytime soon? Or we'll let you have the last say, man. And
and then
hang with me for just a minute, okay, on the
line
as I wrap this up, all right?
No problem. Well, I think, you know, obviously we have tours to do and more albums to make and all of those things, but I think that, you know, the most important thing I'm doing right now just goes hand in hand with what we just talked about before this, and that is we're doing a charity project for a charity that I sponsored for or helped sponsor and been part of for about the last 12 years called Children of the Night. And it's for runaway sexually abused kids who come here to Los Angeles, where I live now, and hope to be a rock star or a movie star and get
hooked into the wrong.
Well, no, they get met at the bus by you know, by the pimp who makes them a prostitute and who who then they become drug addicts, then they become HIV infected and they die.
Yeah.
And there's a woman who started this organization. Her name is Dr. Lois Lee. She about 15 years ago would go out on the streets, and she's been beaten up quite badly at times, and just rip these kids away from these pimps and take them away and give them some shelter. And during that time, now we've been able to build a shelter and a school for the kids, and it's from 12 years old to 18 years old. So, I mean, it really happens young. Most of the kids are like, you know, 13, 14 years old, and it's a shame to know what's going to happen to them. But luckily, AIDS medicine is doing better, so a lot of them have a lot more longer life expectancy. But anyway, because it's a private charity, we have to earn a lot of money for it every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's not government subsidized in any way. So we're doing an album much like the one we did for Hearing Aid.
Okay.
Which was for, of course, Rock Relief for Africa. We're doing another one like that, which will feature some five or six great guitar players, five or six great singers, both, you know, from the past and from the future, and an album as well with material will be given to us by other bands that have not been released yet, plus a DVD of it, plus we're going to re-release the Hearing Aid audio on CD that was only released on vinyl. That's how long ago that was, and the DVD of that as well, and all for the purpose of you know, keeping this charity alive. So that's the thing that you know, is really most important on my plate at the moment. On a lighter note, I'm doing a part in Jack Black. So I just mentioned Jack before him. He's doing a film called Tenacious D, The Pick of Destiny, and it's about his life as a kid with his father telling him he couldn't listen to this music, and that man's the devil, and you know the usual. And so it's all about that. And in the film, I play, oddly enough, Ronnie James Dio, who comes alive from a poster and sings a little piece of music to Jack and gives him the impetus to go to Hollywood and rock.
That's,
so I'll be doing that
incredible.
As well, and that'll be a lot of fun.
That sounds like a terrific project, and leave it to Jack Black. I think it's awesome, and I'll look forward, and I'm sure all Dio fans will be looking forward to seeing you on the screen with Jack Black. Man, that's great, man. That's awesome.
Well, they'll have a laugh, that's for sure.
That's for sure, man. Well, Ronnie, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us today, man.
You're welcome, AJ.
Hey, it really means a lot. And we wish you well, man, in all that you do. And God bless you. And keep on rocking, brother. Thanks, kid. I will. For everything you've given us. All right, man?
Thanks, AJ. Thanks for what you've given me, too.
Okay, very cool. Hold the line, okay?
You got it.
All right, thank you. You're listening to 91.3 FM WOVR in Bethlehem. That, of course, was Ronnie James Dio. And I think we'll just continue, and we'll bring you some new Dio. We're going to do one off of the latest one. Yeah, I thought, why not? I've been listening to it and decided we'll do something for Master of the Moon. We're going to do Shivers. This is Dio on 91.3 FM WOVR, Bethlehem. Fritz rocks.